The Tom Woods Show, episode 2251.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, all you old timers out there from the Ron Paul 2008 campaign, you may remember my friend Larry Lepard, who spent $200,000 of his own money on full-page newspaper ads in support of Dr. Paul. Well, Larry has had an uncanny way with money over the years, and he made a presentation to my paid membership on how to insure yourself against currency debasement. That is to say, how to survive inflation. Well, I took that presentation out from behind the paywall, and I'm making it available to the general public for free. Check it out at tomwoods.com/Larry. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm glad to be joined once again by Orrin McIntyre, who is a host and columnist over at The Blaze. He has a very worthwhile Substack, which I will link to on the show notes page, which is tomwoods.com/2251. And I thought I would talk to him about this ongoing and still unfolding story about Twitter and Elon Musk and the previous Twitter leadership's suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop story. This is not a small thing. This is a microcosm of 2022 America, and we got to talk about it. So, Orrin, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
All right, let's dig into this. First of all, before we even get into the details, who cares about Hunter Biden's laptop in the first place? What's so exciting about it that people would be wanting to suppress the news about it?
Well, that's the really interesting thing, right? Is at this point, we're seeing a lot of people trying to make this into the nothing burger, right? Like, this seems to be the tack that the media is taking. Oh, nothing to see here. Turns out that the Biden laptop was never really a story, never really mattered. And so the fact that whether or not it got covered up is just immaterial. It wouldn't really have affected the election. So while there is, I think, a lot to learn from the Biden laptop, I mean, obviously there seems to be connections with Hunter Biden selling influence, peddling influence to foreign companies and different government officials, that kind of thing. Obviously, corruption looks pretty evident from what we can see there. I think the real story, they always say the cover-up is much worse than the actual crime. And I think it would be really smart for most people who are talking about this to be focused on the cover-up, because whether or not the information on the laptop actually would have fundamentally altered the outcome of the election is really immaterial. The big news here is that it's very clear that elements of the federal government, including the FBI, were seeding these social media companies with the idea that this hacked information would eventually come out. And when it did, the social media companies felt it was incumbent upon them to work with the government and political parties to actively suppress a story which they knew to be true because they were worried about the possible outcome. So whether the information on the laptop is ultimately something that could lead to criminal conviction or would have altered the outcome of the election, that's not really what should be the focus of the story. The focus should be this massive leviathan that moved in the direction of censorship in the middle of a presidential election.
Well, I agree completely. That is the thing that I want to focus on. But just for background, I wanted to know, especially because it's obvious from the suppression of the story that the suppressors obviously fear there's something on there. And I was wondering, of course, what it is that they fear might be on there. Now, it's interesting that as this story has unfolded, and it's turned out that obviously there was some manipulation by Twitter, we'll talk about that, that the response has been, and by the way, if I never hear the word nothing burger again, it'll be too soon for me.
Yeah.
But the response has been, oh, this is not, there's nothing to see here. But how exactly could there be nothing to see here when, as we all know, if the tables were turned and it turned out that a right-wing media had suppressed a story that would have damaged Donald Trump, we would never hear the end of it. Nobody would allow us to say, oh, that's nothing. Never.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the power that the left has, though, right? Is that because they have this hegemonic control of media and kind of the consensus-making apparatus, they feel like they can completely disappear this. Now, I don't think that's possible because they are losing aspects of that. And we can tell because Twitter is releasing this in the first place, right?
Like, yeah.
No matter how you feel about Elon Musk, and I think a lot of people are reasonable in their hesitance to trust Elon Musk. They say, okay, he has certain opinions, he has certain relationships, he's obviously closely tied to the government in many ways. So I totally understand the skepticism of Elon Musk as like this totally pure figure that's going to come in and clean the closet and expose everything. I understand that. But you do have to look at the actions taken, right? And the fact that Elon Musk seems to have captured one of the most important nodes in our country and in many ways the wider world's information distribution network and has used that to expose the corruption and the collusion involved between the social media giants, different political parties, and the federal government itself really speaks to what he's trying to do here, right? And so the fact that now there's a leak, and this is why they were all, everyone knew the loss of Twitter for the left was a big deal, right? They made these noises for a reason because they understand that Twitter is the dopamine delivery system for the average left-wing journalist. They can't leave. They don't know how. And so that means that this place where all of these stories get crafted, where all these narratives are filtered, is now not completely under the total censorship regime of progressives. And that is a very dangerous thing for a government that relies very heavily on the constant manipulation of information. And so I think it is very valuable that there is this ability for the narrative to be broken. Now, they are still operating under the assumption that they can enforce their will on this, right? It's not hypocrisy, it's hierarchy. Of course, the left is able to move past a story like this without any damage happening to them. They assume that they'll be able to, and for good reason, they usually have. I mean, just look at what's happened with Sam Bankman-Fried, right? Like this whole thing with crypto, this guy is going to get away with this massive scheme, and it looks like he's not going to pay any real costs. So it's a reasonable assumption for them to think that they can kind of push past this. But the real problem is this constant leak of information that's going to be coming from Twitter directly revealing all of this backroom dealing that's been happening. And their only real option at this point is to just flood the zone and poison the well and say, look, this coverage doesn't mean anything. There's nothing here. We're just showing how social media companies moderate people doing their job. No problem, right?
You mentioned hypocrisy. I think it's important. It's a point you keep making, and it's important for us to drum it into our heads that what's going on here in cases like this is not hypocrisy, that the left wants freedom of speech for itself, but not for its enemies, and that just goes to show they're hypocrites. It does not show that they're hypocrites any more than the example I've given in the past. The 17th century Puritans were alleged hypocrites because they didn't allow religious liberty. They never claimed they believed in the abstract concept of religious liberty. Their principle was, if you're offering proper worship to God, then you should have religious liberty. That's their principle. They're not saying there's some abstract enlightenment principle of religious liberty that should be granted to everybody. They never believed in that. So they were not hypocrites when they denied it to others. Well, likewise, the left does not, at least in this version of it, does not believe in any of these general principles. They believe in what advances the revolution. And in that, they're not hypocrites. They're very, very principled in adhering to that. What advances the revolution, that's our principle. That's what we favor.
One of the things that I think is very difficult for a lot of people, especially people of maybe a libertarian or right-wing bent to understand, is that all principles are grounded in tradition and a shared moral understanding. And I think a lot of the confusion that happens when we look at the left claiming certain principles and then retreating from them is we don't understand the process that's going on. We think that we are still operating under kind of this quasi-post-Christian residue of certain moral assumptions that everyone can operate under. And we thought that those were universal things that everyone would always apply to. And when they speak the language, we assume they're speaking that language. But of course, the left is not, right? Those principles were completely disembodied from that tradition. And instead, the left used the memory of those, the social credit of things like freedom of speech and freedom of religion, freedom of the press, and they use them to dismantle the structures in society that they no longer thought were useful for their purposes. And now that they're done dismantling those things, there's no way that they're just going to leave those disembodied principles laying on the table for someone else to pick up and use on their new institutions that they want to create. The left wants to create a new shared language. They want new definitions. This is why when they talk about democracy, they don't mean any kind of thing that we would have recognized as democracy. When they talk about freedom of speech, they're not talking about the same thing you are. And I think it's really difficult for people to understand. They think it's hypocritical because they're trying to hold the left to a principle that the left does not have. They think they share some kind of common language and they can shame the left into action. But that's not going to happen because the left knows that they have a superior way of living. They know they should rule. They should be in charge. And keeping themselves in power is the most important thing. And they're not going to let you use some kind of freedom of speech or journalism or holding the powerful accountable to disassemble all the things that they have now built. They're not that foolish.
Hey, folks, quick sponsor message. The world is so screwed up, you cannot do anything on autopilot. You can't do anything just because everybody else is doing it. And that principle holds especially when it comes to healthcare. We all know how screwed up American healthcare is. But if you do what everybody else is doing, you're going to wind up in a crazy, broken system. Secede from that system with CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth reverses the vicious incentives that got us into this mess in the first place. CrowdHealth believes the insurance model is broken. And CrowdHealth has a better way to fund your healthcare costs. You see any doctor you want, no deductibles, no exclusions, no co-pays. You pay only the first $500 of any healthcare event. The CrowdHealth community takes care of the rest. So you pay one low monthly total to fund your account, and that monthly subscription helps fund healthcare costs of the entire CrowdHealth community. CrowdHealth gives you true peace of mind, and unlike insurance companies, it helps you find great care at a fair price. It always pays doctors as quickly as possible and actively negotiates to keep costs down for everyone. Take charge of your healthcare today with CrowdHealth. Open enrollment is the only time you can hit eject on the broken system without penalty, so don't wait. And for a limited time, join for just $99 per month for your first 6 months when you use promo code WOODS at joincrowdhealth.com. That's joincrowdhealth.com, promo code WOODS. CrowdHealth is not health insurance. It's a totally different way of paying for healthcare. Terms and conditions may apply.
I want to go back to something you said about whether Elon Musk can be trusted, because I do see a lot of people cheering what he's doing, but then I see the occasional contrarian saying, well, he's part of the New World Order, he's part of this or that, or he's friends with this person, whatever. And the thing is, none of that really matters to me because I don't need Elon Musk to be a carbon copy of myself. I just would be happy if he did certain things. And if he stops doing those things, or if he does the opposite, then I'll oppose him. But right now, he is one of the boldest, I think it's safe to say, one of the boldest people in America, because he's taking on everything. He's taking on the deep state. He's taking on the current regime. He's taking on Biden specifically. Everybody. He's taking on the entire COVID establishment. Now, there are some things I wish he would do differently. I think Alex Jones should be restored. I think some of the doctors that were banned from Twitter, I hope they're eventually going to be part of this general amnesty. But for heaven's sake, he offered a general amnesty to a huge, huge number of people. I mean, I just saw Laura Loomer back on Twitter all of a sudden. This is not a small thing. And I think when somebody comes along who, yeah, does not agree with you, does not hold your ideology, but who is pretty sound on some things that matter, I'm not going to spend my time nitpicking the guy. I'm not looking for him to be an object of worship. I'm just looking to get a few practical advances out of the guy, and I think I'm getting them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the right attitude. A lot of people want like this purity test before someone's allowed to do something good, which is just ridiculous because, first, that's not the kind of situation you're involved in. You're not the kind of person that can be picky when we're kind of in the situation that we're in, kind of over who's going to make those big changes. Also, it's something to remember that great men of history, and I'm not necessarily putting Elon in that box yet, but I'm just saying it's something for people to keep in mind. Great men of history tend not to be purely ideological. They tend to be more about getting things done than they tend to be about checking all your ideological boxes. And so if you're looking for someone who can cut the Gordian knot and break through, they may not be 100% the perfect libertarian or conservative or whatever. Like you said, Elon Musk has espoused policies that I disagree with. He's talked about ending anonymity on Twitter, which I am very much against, vehemently against. So he is not perfect, and I do not support him in everything he does. But like you said, you have to take those wins where you get them. And I'm going to look at what he does, not just what he says, because that's another aspect people don't think about. Sometimes people in these positions, people who are running companies, having to deal with the government, having to deal with regulation, they have to say one thing and then they have to do another. Like Elon has to present a certain plan to his investors, to his regulators, to different parts of the media. That doesn't necessarily mean it's his plan. It doesn't mean he's announcing everything he's going to do. And so I think people need to keep that under advisement as well, that just because Elon is not coming out and stating blow for blow everything he's going to do out loud, announcing that before he does it the way you want him to, doesn't mean that he doesn't have some of those same goals in mind later on down the road.
Let's get to the actual meat of it. So we have the so-called Twitter files, and these are apparently being released in batches. And so as we're recording this, the first batch was released. There were a couple of journalists, I guess, who were chosen. I guess Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss, who got these things and then went through them. Now, we'll get to the Jim Baker thing in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly did we see in there? In a way, it's a, quote, nothing burger, only to the extent that we already suspected that this was going on. But that doesn't mean that there's no value in actually having the receipts.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said in my piece for The Blaze here recently, is if you've been paying attention, if you're someone who's plugged into this stuff, and not everybody is, it's okay, guys, you can have a life. You don't have to obsess over this. But if you're someone who has been following all this stuff and you know what's going on, none of this should really be surprising, right? Like a lot of this was stuff we could infer from the behavior of the government, from the behavior of Twitter, from the different reporting we'd already received from places like the New York Post. So none of this is groundbreaking other than we have the smoking gun now, right? Like it's one thing to speculate. It's one thing to say it's pretty obvious that this is how a social media giant is operating. It's pretty obvious that this is how different political parties or the government is interacting with these people. But it's an entirely different thing to have the cold, hard documents, the process documents and emails and communications, so that you can lay it out for people who might be skeptical about what happened here. And that's what Taibbi does in the thread, which is the first disbursement of documents. Like you said, we're supposed to get at least two. And yeah, we'll get to why the second one has been delayed here, because it was supposed to come pretty close together, but it hasn't. But so for Taibbi's part, he first lays out the communication part of it at first. He lays out the censorship process that goes on behind Twitter. And he says, first, Twitter is this free speech network, and it really does create this promise of connecting everyone. But over time, they have to create these tools to stop things like spam and financial fraud and those kind of things. And as is so often the case, once you create a tool that can censor in one way, it will eventually be used to censor in another way. And as advertisers and companies and political parties learn that these tools exist, they start putting in requests for censorship. So he kind of shows the communications between not just Democrats, but also the Republicans are also capable of submitting these requests, and posts are censored at the request of both political parties, which should be chilling all on its own. Like a lot of people try to make this out of like, oh, well, if both sides can do it, then it's fine. But obviously, like the fact that a political party can just have a private citizen's post removed, and not just a private citizen, but all the way up to we see people like celebrities like James Woods are censored on behalf of requests of the Democratic National Committee. This is obviously a very regular process. But the other thing that Taibbi shows is that over time, because this whole system is based on requests and it's based on personal connections, the very progressive leanings of the Twitter staff lead them to honor the requests of Democrats far more often than the requests of Republicans. And we see far more conservative, libertarian, right-leaning people censored than we do people on the left. And so he shows that there's this culture of censorship and that the censorship runs one way. And then he goes deeper into the actual breakdown of the story, where we see the New York Post story emerge. And we know from other sources that the FBI is already having regular meetings with Twitter and Facebook and other social media giants, and they're laying the groundwork for you might receive hacked information and it might be manipulated or it might be false from the Russians, that kind of thing, an attempt to interfere with elections. So this is already percolating in the minds of the Twitter staff when this story lands. And what's really interesting with Taibbi is then the information that he was given by Musk to lay out is it shows this narrative of how the story gets introduced and how it's immediately dropped into this box of hacked information. Even though multiple people in these chains of emails raise concerns about this information being filed, they're like, are we sure it falls under this policy? It doesn't seem to. This doesn't seem to qualify correctly. But this decision has already been made by parts of Twitter staff. Vijaya Gadde, I believe, is the name of the woman who was spearheading this effort. She's the one that was on Joe Rogan with Tim Pool talking about how they censor people on Twitter. And I think she was also key in censoring Donald Trump, getting him removed from Twitter as well. But she seems to be one of the key people who like got this ball rolling. And once the momentum of the decision had been made, multiple people along the way, to their credit in this revealed email chain, bring up, hey, are we infringing on the First Amendment? Like, are we going to be running afoul of possibly messing with election, that kind of thing? And what's very clear is that like every step of the way, they were told, well, it's too dangerous. We can't let this story out because we saw what happened with Hillary Clinton and the emails in the 2016 election, and it could be that all over again. And so what's very clear is like the possibility that this story could have a Hillary Clinton email server effect on the 2020 election was the most important thing to them. Not the truth of the story, not the veracity, not the legality even. The most concerning thing is that this could allow Donald Trump to become president again. And they were very dedicated to making sure that this story did not have that effect. And so they went to very extraordinary lengths, as we already know from previous reporting. They censored the White House spokeswoman and they go ahead and stop these links from being shared, even in private direct messages, which were like extreme measures that were designed only to stop things previously, like child pornography and such. And so they kick this thing into high gear, making sure that this story is just unshareable before the election.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. Now, meanwhile, let's talk about the delay between one drop and another. And this shadowy figure, not so shadowy because he's right out there, right in front of you, Jim Baker.
Yeah, so the Jim Baker thing is amazing, really. You find out that in between the distribution to Taibbi and to Barry Weiss, they discovered that this guy, Jim Baker, or James Baker, is like the lead counsel over on Twitter, one of the lead attorneys. And he has been vetting the documents before they go out to these journalists, which is particularly concerning because one of the things Taibbi specifically notes in his thread that surprised him was the lack of references to the FBI. Well, it turns out Baker was an FBI lawyer, and not only was he an FBI lawyer, he was involved in the whole Russiagate investigation. And so this guy is not only tied to the FBI directly and already has a history of like manipulating and being involved in attacking the Trump administration from the government, he is now also one of the key attorneys who is still serving even after Elon Musk has taken over as part of the Twitter regime. And he is actively, what it looks like, I mean, we don't know for sure at the moment, but it looks like he's actively filtering out possibly FBI connections between Twitter in the middle of this whole thing. And so like, as this is happening, Barry Weiss recognizes that this guy is the same lawyer who is part of the FBI, and they go ahead and they cut him loose. Now, the interesting thing will be, of course, how much of that documentation survived, right? Like, was Baker able to completely purge it? Did he purge anything? How do we know? Like, how do we know the veracity of the documents now that they'll be coming out after they've been filtered through this? Hopefully, he was stopped in the middle of that process, but we just don't know for sure. But this really speaks to this professional managerial class and the way that they spread between this revolving door between major corporations who have a massive impact on our information distribution and the federal government, and how someone who has already been involved in shady interactions and anti-Trump interactions in a federal law enforcement capacity is also able to acquire a job inside a major social media company and sticks around even after this changeover from Elon Musk. This institutional momentum allows him to keep his hand in the cookie jar when they're distributing this information.
Hey folks, time for a 60-second fireside chat with Ol Woods. I want to tell you two things. The first, you already know. The second, you probably don't know. Here's the thing you know. You need life insurance because your loved ones are still going to have all those expenses after you're gone. Now, you know that with our philosophy, we talk all about individual responsibility. Well, you got to take that seriously, and that includes providing for your loved ones. But here's the thing you probably didn't know. It's way, way, way less expensive than you probably think it is, and that may have been one of the reasons keeping you from doing it. I have plenty of life insurance coverage. It gives me enormous peace of mind. And to this day, I'm shocked at how little I pay for it. Well, the best way to shop for life insurance to get the best price and the best package for you is with Policy Genius. Their technology makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from top companies like AIG and Prudential in just a few clicks to find that lowest price. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $17 per month for $500,000 of coverage. They can help you find options that offer coverage in as little as a week and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Your loved ones deserve a financial safety net. You deserve a smarter way to find and buy it. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description or the show notes, depending how you're consuming this episode, to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. So now that these documents are coming out, internal documents about how an issue like this is handled, obviously the conclusion you have to reach here is that if this is the tip of the iceberg that's visible to us, imagine the giant behemoth that's beneath the water. And so one hopes that this makes perhaps previously naive conservatives, let's say, who still had this lingering faith in our noble institutions, finally take a second look at things. If 5-6 years ago, somebody had said, by 2022, some people on the right are going to be calling for the abolition of the FBI, I would not have believed that, because why would I? But now we are seeing calls like that. And I hope that even though this is just one story, it obviously points to manipulation well beyond this story, that this will bring other people to these types of previously unheard of and radical conclusions.
Yeah, Tom, and I'm one of those people. If you had talked to me 7 or 8 years ago about dismantling the FBI, I'd be like, okay, commie, very good for you.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Exactly, yeah.
I was one of these people, so I really am the target audience for this stuff. It's really only, you know, it was really the COVID regime that broke my faith in the constitutional government as we have it today and its ability to operate fairly and in the interest of its citizens. So I think a lot of people will say things like, oh, well, if you don't understand it by now, you're never going to get it. And I don't think that's true. Day after day, I know a lot of people who are just normal, rock-ribbed, salt-of-the-earth conservatives in red states and red areas who still hold on to their understanding of the government and its function and that it's on their side and that you support, you back the blue no matter what and support these agencies. And I totally get that. I think you need those people. I think those people are really important. They want to live in a functional society. They are good people who want to be able to trust their government and trust their institutions and support the things that make the country better. I don't think you want to turn those people into like bomb-throwing radicals. I think what you want to do is reveal to them that the institutions that they want to trust and they want to believe in have rotted from the inside and do not care about them and their lives and the protection of their children. And I think when you do that, those people then become capable of supporting real reform, real changes. And like you said, you now have Republicans who are saying things like the FBI has to go. And it's hard to see how you can avoid that as a Republican candidate staring this stuff in the face. Now, the thing I talk about in my Blaze piece was that as a conservative, what they should not expect, what people on the right, libertarians, what people should not expect is this big backlash against what Twitter did or what the FBI did or what political parties did. The journalists who are supposed to hold these people accountable, they do not care. They don't care about free speech. They don't care about journalistic integrity. They aren't actually motivated by any of those principles. They are interested in censoring and stopping people like Donald Trump from taking power. They care about that way more. That is their highest principle. It's not that they have no principles. It's that that is their principle. That is far more important than any of the things we think should be the objective truth or objective reporting. Those things are just not as valuable to them. And so there is not going to be some kind of major backlash from the New York Times or someone saying, oh, the FBI is out of control and we finally understand the problems here and we finally understand the corruption at the heart of these social media giants and we have to do. None of that's going to happen. But what can happen, what we are seeing, where the victories can come, are in the kind of things that Elon Musk is doing, right? Capturing those institutions that were progressive strongholds, exposing their corruption, and then making sure to expel these corrupt bureaucracies that have turned these institutions into effective party arms of the Democrats, right? And that is where victories will actually come, in these real captures of institutions, these true restructurings of bureaucracies and systems. That's where you can actually see this stuff turn around. It's not going to come in some big sweeping revelation. So it's really important to have this smoking gun. It's really important to have this evidence. I think it does awaken more and more people like myself to kind of this level of corruption. And then it allows people to support the kind of guys who would make these changes. Because if you look at the Republican Party right now, there is a concerted effort to say, oh, the red wave didn't materialize. It was all about candidate quality. It's because the MAGA people were in charge. And if we can just get back to Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney Republicans, conservatives can be in charge again. Like, they are trying to contain the American First or MAGA or whatever wing of the Republicans who are looking to reform institutions like the FBI. And so the more and more conservatives can have this stuff exposed to them and can change their mind, the more and more likely they are to reject a return to that controlled opposition GOP and look for people who are actually willing to implement significant change.
One more thing. I reported in my newsletter on an item involving Musk being lectured to by an EU official in a private meeting, basically threatening him and reminding him that there are certain rules in the EU about hate speech and disinformation. I can't even take these people seriously with the disinformation thing. I mean, these are the biggest liars in the world, and they have to know it. They have to know that it's laughable for them to be worried about disinformation coming from sources other than themselves. But obviously, the problems with these things are, I don't trust the state to tell me what's disinformation, what isn't, because they've obviously proven they can't be trusted with that, even if that were a desirable function of government. And secondly, obviously, so-called hate speech is completely arbitrary, because there are plenty of hateful things that people in certain, shall we call them, marginalized groups say all day, every day, and they just have carte blanche to say what they want. So that's always going to be a double standard, and one man's truth-telling is another man's hate speech. So I don't want them involved. So that's really where you would find out what Elon Musk is made of. If it should come to that, either that or the Apple Store keeping Twitter out, then we find out, is he willing to take this all the way to the end?
Yeah, and we've already seen him in ways playing chicken with some of these threats, right? We've already heard rumblings, and it's unclear exactly how much of a threat came from Apple, that kind of thing. But we've already heard of him having to push back against this kind of censorship. The real problem, and this is the beauty of Musk taking over Twitter specifically, the real problem is, like, you had these free speech apps before, right? We had like Parler, and we have places like Gab. And the problem that these places have is, unfortunately, they end up being right-wing, conservative, canceled ghettos. They only contain the people who are already interested in this stuff, or they've already been pushed off of other platforms. And because of that, they're very easy to cancel. They can be painted as, purveyors of hate, or they're being used to coordinate January 6th or whatever. And then the tech companies can obliterate them, right? And that makes them very soft targets. So you can't just go build your own Twitter, actually, because if you do, all the other parts of the Leviathan will just cut you off and isolate you and let you bleed to death out in the corners, right? But the thing with Twitter, like I said, the reason it's so important is Twitter is baked deeply into the information distribution network. It is where the journalists and the famous people, the media personalities, it's where they are. There's a specific thing about the way people communicate on Twitter that draws these word cells, these people who are obsessed with the manipulation of language, into it. And they love the feedback. They love the interaction. They love the fawning they get. And they love the power that they used to be able to exert in these fields. And so Musk capturing this specific platform allows him a degree of leverage and uncancelability that just doesn't exist if he just went out and started Truth Social or something, right? And so they can make these threats, and maybe someone will eventually pull the trigger. Like if things get out of control enough, someone might actually try to make this happen. And then, like you said, that really is the test of Musk's mettle. But what happens for a while is Musk gets to run this operation without that level of censorship because the platform already has that level of notoriety, and it already has an interaction of celebrities and people from the left and the right. And there's just too much going on for that platform for someone like Google or Apple to just completely cancel it out of nowhere. They really have to have, this is an emergency big red panic button situation if they're going to do that kind of censorship. And so I think Musk gets more room to maneuver and set things up than he would, again, if he had just created some platform out of nothing. The acquisition of Twitter is far more powerful. So I think if he can show that the platform can operate and possibly even be profitable in that environment without the interference of governments and censorship and other people, then he can make it harder and harder for these corporations to justify that. Because maybe, like I said, they will panic enough to make that move. But when they do, it will be very obvious to everyone what is happening. It's no small thing for them to just rip this node out of the information network. And I think that gives Musk way more room to maneuver.
Well, we're going to leave it there. I know you're continuing to report on this. And as you said to me in our little exchange, this is a multi-week story. There are going to be further developments in it. And I'm going to keep on following it because this is one of those rare times when the people in charge, the elites, are having something unfold before them that they can't control and they do not want to happen. Usually things go the way they want because they're running things. But suddenly there's this monkey wrench that's been thrown into the works that they didn't expect and they're not quite sure how to cope with. So it's entertaining and a revelation at the same time. So I want people to check you out. So I would recommend your Substack as well as your Twitter account as well, which I very much enjoy and profit from. And I'll link to both of these things at tomwoods.com/2251. Well, thanks so much, Orrin McIntyre. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, that is another episode of the Tom Woods Show. I will see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.